Thank you for tuning in today for our podcast, 7210, the Chapel Series. 7210 is a production of Southwestern Christian University, produced by April Black, and I'm David Roman. Check out the university on our website at swcu.edu and find out more about the over 30 different degree programs that we offer. The campus is located at 7210 Northwest 39th Expressway in Bethany, Oklahoma. Stop by and check us out either on the web or at our main campus.
Good morning. You guys always sit on the front row? You sure? Where's my posters? I wanted t-shirts. Happy Halloween. Fitting that I got to speak on Halloween, huh? When I was first initially asked to do this by Judah, I got to be honest, there's no way I was doing this. Like, I'm not a preacher, I'm not a theologian, I'm not a pastor, and I don't do well talking about personal issues in front of a big group of people, much less hardly anybody. But I'm not a very vulnerable and transparent person. And I'm also not an overly emotional person. And because of that, this subject and this topic regarding stories was something that at first I thought I would say no. As time went on and I prayed about it and other people talked to me about it, I figured that I would possibly want to be able to share some aspects of my story. Time allowing, I'm not going to go into great detail on some aspects of it due to the constraints of time, but I want to be able to quickly go over incident that has happened to me that created a different turn in my life and created a different path. I want to start off, I'm not going to read a bunch of verses, we'll only be here for a couple hours, so. This is Mark 5:25-34, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all the money that she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and just grabbed his cloak and touched it. That's all the power she had. She grabbed the cloak because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately, her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized the power had gone out of his clothes. You see the people crowded against you? His disciples answered. And yet you can ask, who touched me? But Jesus said, looking around to see who had done it, then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down at his feet and trembled with fear out of what just happened, told him the truth. He said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be free from your suffering. This is an excerpt from a book of somebody that I just recently met. His wife survived the Rwandan genocide, which was a terrible genocide in the Rwandan region. Two ethnic groups, one ethnic group killing off another ethnic group. Her whole family died in this genocide. One day, a small opening appeared in a cocoon, and a man sat and watched the butterfly for hours as it struggled to force its body through that little hole. Then it seems to stop making any progress. It appeared as if it had gotten as far as it could, and it could go no further. So the man decided to help the butterfly. He took a pair of scissors and opened the cocoon. The butterfly then emerged easily, but it had a tiny withered body and shriveled wings. The man continued to watch, expecting that at any moment the wings would open, enlarge, expand, and become firm to be able to support the butterfly's body so that it could fly and do what it was meant to do. But nothing happened. In fact, the butterfly spent the rest of its short life crawling around with a withered body and shriveled wings. It was never able to fly. What the man, in his kindness and goodwill, did not understand was that restricting the cocoon and the struggle required for the butterfly to get through the tiny opening are God's way of forcing fluid from the body of the butterfly into its wings so that it can be ready for flight once it achieves freedom from the cocoon. Sometimes struggles are exactly what we need in life. If God allowed us to go through our life without any obstacles and no struggles, it would cripple us. We would not be as strong as we could have been, and we will never be able to fly. So a real quick backstory on me. I grew up about a half a mile from here, Bethany, Oklahoma, the booming metropolis. And I graduated high school, and I'm going to skip through aspects of my childhood. I had an amazing childhood. My parents are here. They're my heroes. I mean, I couldn't have asked for any better parents. A two-parent home, everything I ever wanted. My whole family is just so spiritually sound and grounded in the foundation, the root of biblical text, structure, and Christianity, lessons, going to church twice on Sunday, going to church on Wednesday, making a bunch of good friends, having good influences. All of that was a very good childhood. But there were some things that I noticed that I did that other kids didn't do. I lied a lot. And I also put up this facade at a young age of something I thought other people wanted to see. And I didn't really know myself. I knew who I wanted other people wanted me to be. So I portrayed that. But I lied to myself and I lied to other people. And these are small lies, and obviously it's still sin, and lies still can cause problems and conflict. But these lies continued to grow and grow, and they're mostly lies to myself. I'm not who I want or who I need to be right now. So growing up, there were some minor things that probably needed to change. I was very arrogant, and it was because I didn't have confidence. So I tried to put this facade of arrogance, and I'm better or I'm smarter, and when in all actuality, that wasn't true at all. I did that in front of the people that I was afraid of because I knew they really were genuinely better than I was. So you heard of the one-uppers? I was a one-upper, trying to one-up everybody else's story. But growing up, I had a lot of good friends. We had a lot of fun. We had a really cool neighborhood. I played sports. I went to high school, played basketball, went to high school, Pump City West down the street. Really didn't grow up thinking much about academics, but I loved to learn. And I loved to learn about things outside, geography, plants, animals, cultures, people, different religions. I didn't do it in an academic setting. I just did it by myself. And I went through school. And then whenever I was a senior in high school, I said, I'm going to go become an Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation fishing game warden. It's basically cops for animals, right? And so I have that in mind. I'm like, I'm going to go to school. I go to school down the street. I have a class called zoology. I'd never heard of it before. My mom told me who the professor was and some of you know who the professor is. And my mom said, this is going to be a very hard class. I was like, I'll make an A in that easily, no problem. All my other classes I was supposed to do really well in, and I think that first semester I may have gotten a 0.7, which is not very good. Some of you can relate. This is where I can instill confidence. It gets better. So after that first semester, I was so excited about all the friends I made and the social life that I had, that I didn't worry about school. It was a backstory, but I slowly somehow weaved together better GPAs. I started to learn to focus and pay attention on the things that I really was enjoying. Like, I can learn things that I enjoy learning, but I can't really focus on things that I don't enjoy learning. That's my problem. I need to be able to kind of spread the wealth there as far as my interest level is concerned. So I went to SNU, played basketball there, I graduated. I was able to do some cool trips and the study abroad things a couple times, and I went from Alaska to Costa Rica to Michigan. Really cool experiences. After school, what do I do? Well, I had a few options, but I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. I tried out for the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation. I was the second person in line for the job. I tried out again for another interview, third person in line for the job. Then, in the meantime, I worked for the state called the Oklahoma Water Resources Board. They collect samples in water, and they go around and they check stations just to come bring it back to the lab and to make sure that it's clear, purified, it doesn't have any abnormalities or alienistic oddities to it. I did that for about a year, and then I finally said, I don't want to do this. I want to be Indiana Jones. So I thought to myself, how can I be Indiana Jones? I talked to one of my professors, the school down the street, and he said, this is what you need to do. You need to go to geography because it blends anthropological, geographical, environmental, ecological, and botanical methodology all wrapped into one. It's It's one of the oldest known academic fields, philosophy and geography. Colum can back me up on that. And so if we look at this, this is where my life started to turn, and I started getting confidence myself. I enrolled at the University of Oklahoma in a doctoral program, a dual doctoral program, doing my master's and my PhD wrapped in the one. Okay? I started in 2006. I loved it. And also, I liked the fact that it made me feel smarter. Once again, cockiness, overconfidence, maybe borderline narcissism. And so when we look at ourselves, when we're down the road in our story, we can see where, why and the reason why different types of things happen to us, because they say hindsight is 2020. So I'm in school, I'm doing very well, and I'm working on an NSF grant, not one that I got, but riding the coattails of my professor who got one. And we're going down to Costa Rica. We go down to Costa Rica in the wet season. Those of you in my physical geography class know that Costa Rica has two seasons, the rainy and the dry. This is the rainy season. My PhD advisor is, pretend like this is the edge of a cliff right here, okay? There's a big white oak tree going straight up. My PhD advisor climbs up there about 40 feet trying to collect the specimen of plant that grows at the top. It's called an epiphyte. It grows on other plants. So I'm standing there and assisting him. I don't know if I'm giving emotional support or what, but things start to drop down at me. I'm supposed to catch them, categorize them, and then put them in a basket. I wanted to be up there. Next thing I remember, boom, all of this ground right here that I was standing on with the tree right here collapsed, and I fell 43 feet straight down. Didn't hit my head, thank God, but I fell 43 feet straight down. Everything below me was a blur. Everything that I was standing on shot down. It was the rainy season in Costa Rica. The ground was saturated with a lot of rain. It was just, my body weight was just so much so that it couldn't take the pressure of me standing on it. That's all it took, straight down. I'd have been meta-driven to San Jose, which is the biggest hospital in Costa Rica, and it took about 3.5 hours to get there of excruciating pain in the back of somebody's pickup, okay? They didn't have ambulance service that was at least very efficient. I guess the ambulance service was an F-150. So I'm back in F-150, finally get there, they shoot me up with morphine and do all these tests, like a battery of tests. I'm out of it. Like, I don't even remember. I can't remember calling my parents. I don't know what. I think my PhD advisor called them. Long story short, they basically said I needed to go to the States. I had been in the San Jose hospital for 5 days, 6 days maybe. It's a blur. And so they said, you've got to go to the States. So finally, they drug me up with something. I can't remember what it's called. And I'm catatonic. And I fly back to the States. My parents pick me up. I immediately go to an orthopedic, another doctor. I have MRIs, CAT scans, all this stuff. I have fractures in my pelvis. I can't walk. I'm in a wheelchair. Then I'm using a walker. I have to stay at my parents'. Remember, at this point, I'm 32 years old, have my own house, having to stay with my parents, right? I was also teaching at SNU and teaching at OU the same time. So at this point, I'm really afraid that with my physical limitations and my physical disability that I have, I'm not going to be able to finish grad school and I'm not going to be able to finish teaching. When everybody was bent over backwards and saying, no, we can do it next semester, but I was so hard-headed and so fearful that I said, I'm going to finish this semester. So I taught class in a wheelchair and I taught class in a walker. I went to class in a wheelchair first and then a walker, taught class in a walker down the street. And then depression started seeking in. And this is where the story gets really hard. And this is where the story starts to become an area that I have very high level of difficulty explaining to you. And also being transparent. Kaylee and Amanda did such a great job of becoming vulnerable and transparent. That's so hard for us to do. I should say the majority. It's so difficult because we are human. When we see somebody who's putting on a facade of perfection, we don't think we're as good as them. When all actuality, they are probably going through something else. If we are transparent and vulnerable with the people, the right people, it opens up dialogue and it allows healing process to take place. It's very important. I want to explain a few things in chronological order in regards to what happened. So I'm still living with my parents, and I'm going to make this fast. I know there's a lot of things that I'm skipping over, but I started making some terrible choices that I never thought or ever envisioned that not much less me, but anybody in our family would ever make. I'm catatonic. I'm over-medicated. I am super depressed. Then that's when the self-pity starts to come in. Then that's when the anxiety and the stress, and all of a sudden you get the weight of the world on your shoulders and you can't escape and you feel like nobody else is feeling this. Everybody's own problems are the biggest problems they know, right? And so because of that, you look at everybody else and think they've got it figured out. I don't have it figured out. They don't have it figured out. Now, they have more experience figuring it out. But in regards to me and my depression, I got so low. I know the other speakers said contemplating suicide. I never got to the point where planning out suicide. But I'll be honest, I thought that if I was dead, things would be better. Now, I didn't plan out the actual suicide attempt, but I would thought multiple times, if I'm dead, my parents won't have to worry about me, my family won't have to worry about me, and finally I can leave this, because I had gotten so depressed, so anxious, and I'd lost everything. Because of that depression and those bad choices, I got kicked out of OU. I got fired from SNU. I was told not to come back. That's when I really hit the floor, because now I have nothing left to work towards. That's something that I felt good about myself. Nothing left in my life that I could grasp onto and say, oh, I remember what it was like before the fall, and I can go back to this. Now there's nothing. So imagine, 32-year-old man teaching at OU and SNU and finishing up a PhD doctoral program. I've got no job, nothing. I floundered around. My parents had to support me. For a number of months, I tried to look for any job I could find. I was so depressed, I worked at Luby's for 2 weeks. Luby's. Those of you that are old enough to know what that is. Luby's. And then I got a job delivering pizzas. I delivered pizzas for 3.5 years. I was a pizza delivery driver before I started working here. And that's a miracle. I can't tell you how God has interacted on my life in my life without me even asking. And I can't tell you the struggles and the depression and the anxiety that God has removed in my life. I cannot explain it to you in detail. It would take too long and I would be too emotional. But I can say God started working. I'm definitely no poet, but this kind of gives you 2011. This gives you the insight of where I was at. Moving forward ever so slowly, even the light can be lonely. My struggles continue to weigh me down. Sitting in the darkness, there's not a sound. My breathing barely moves my spirit. Freedom, I can barely see it. Forced to give up the fight, I'm hardly here, I'm out of sight. Giving up and letting go, I'm thankful I finally know. The pain is just too real, and I never show how I feel. My afflictions are so powerful. My voice is so sorrowful. Every day it's a battle, something I can't handle. I have finally conceded. It's all I ever needed. Let go and let God. Lift my pain, sin, and regret. I'll follow you step by step. Just lead me through the fire. Your love is all I desire. Thank you for setting me free. Now I can finally see. When I wrote that, it had been 2 years since I fell off the cliff, and at my rock bottom, those were my thoughts. The only thing I could think about was, as the story suggests, grabbing the cloak of Jesus. This woman had no power whatsoever. She couldn't even stand up. She had a physical ailment, but it could be a psychological ailment. It could be depression. It could be past trauma, something you've done to yourself, something somebody else has done to you, and vice versa. It could be a number of things that we all go through. Amanda and Kaylee talked about their stories. This is my story. It's filled with trauma and pain, and depression, embarrassment, shame, all of these things. People that are close to me ask me in the past that know the whole story, hey, if you could go back, wouldn't you change everything? I'm like, yes. I would change everything. I think that's a stupid question. I don't know why somebody would ask me that. I fell off a cliff, everything's gone, end. Yes, I would change. So now, within the past year and a half, I would say no. I would say no. Even all the pain I caused, all the afflictions I caused on other people, holding myself hostage from the past of the things I've done, not letting go of that and not learning from that, trusting in myself and not trusting in God, allowing God to work in my life, because I'll be honest, at times I would go in and out of even believing if there was a God. And I don't understand grace. From a logical, scientific perspective, it should not exist. It's one of the most powerful entities that you have on earth is God's grace that you have access to and you can use. And I didn't understand that. I don't understand that. And the other thing, it knows no bounds and it has no limits. The smallest, most minute sin to the largest, most treacherous, awful thing that you could have done. And I've pretty much been everywhere in between that. Okay? So I could not understand that. So I would go through life thinking, I don't believe that. I don't believe that. Then I'd go back, okay, maybe God's real. Okay, this doesn't make sense. It's Bible and all that. Well, I sat down, read the Bible in 2 weeks from the front cover to the back. Revelation from Genesis, Genesis to Revelation. I'm not a theologian. So if you look at the Bible, one thing popped out. A cross-transcending theme from the Old Testament to the New Testament with interrelating aspects that both connect to each other. One of those was the cross-transcending aspect of grace and the people God used to illustrate that grace. Murderers, drunkards, liars, prostitutes, people that had multiple wives, Peter, who had a terrible attitude and was compulsive, people that were egotistical, all these people that God used that are strong, situational, and supportive people of the Bible that hold up these pillars didn't do that on their own, and they had a lot of issues, a lot more issues than some of us in here. Paul's one of the best that I use because literally Paul was pulled out from the fire. Usually, and in my case, God doesn't reach down and pull you straight out of the fire, but he walks with you through the fire. And as he's walking with you through the fire, you become refined. And as you become refined, you grow and you learn, and you're able to have self-examination, and not only the things that are plaguing you now, but the things that you've seen that possibly were hurting you for the majority of your life. It's hard to deal with addiction and past trauma, sexual, mental, spiritual, physical abuse. It's hard not to hold yourself hostage with that. But I'm telling you, there's a way that God works, being able to tangibly experience grace in my life, and then being able to illustrate that, I'll never be the same again. A tangible, not that you have to tangibly experience grace to understand it, but for me, I had to tangibly experience grace in order for me to grasp the magnificent power. And I enjoy this quote, and it says, "Do not be discouraged. We learn most and grow strongest from our pain. Difficult days can be the most productive periods of your life, a time in which you can grow more than at any other time. This is how God works. He sometimes puts his people in positions where they are desperate for his power. Then he shows his provision in ways that display his greatness." That's a perfect example of how God works through us. And it's a perfect example of how God can work through you. I'm telling you, God is real, and he exists, and his grace is real, and we all need it. God confronts us with our utter inability to accomplish anything of value apart from him. That's why when Paul talks about every day the affliction that he prays for God to remove, but God doesn't remove it, and then ultimately he uses that as an example of how much he truly needs God. Truly needs God. All those men and women of the Bible I just told you about had multiple afflictions, temptations, sins, bad pasts, some very evil. Every day they're reminded how much they need God because they saw what God did through them. And that's an example of God's miraculous power. And Jesus and the blood of Jesus, the power that's yours, you just got to grasp it like the lady at the well. It's very important to remember. When we're talking about dealing with certain types of trauma and issues. I know, and this story is not as in-depth as it should be. I have a hard time being vulnerable. It's very difficult for me to be emotional vulnerable. I'm so thankful that a lot of you guys are, because I've learned from that. I was delivering pizzas Thanksgiving. I was at my parents' house, and they said, go get some eggnog. I love eggnog. So I ran to the store, I drove to the store. I didn't run. I wasn't in a wheelchair at the time. So I drove to the store. In the line, checkout line, was Dr. Poteet, who I'd known for a while. Like, hey, what are you doing? I was like, pizzas. Like, what'd you say? I'm delivering pizzas. Well, are you ever going to teach again? I'm like, yeah, I'd like to, but, you know, because I'm sure he knew my backstory. And he said, call this guy. Wrote a name down on a piece of paper, threw it over to me, and it said Chet Horn. I thought to myself, what am I supposed to say to him? And he said, just call him. I said, okay. I go back, tell my parents. My parents are like, are you going to call him? And I said, not right now. I don't think so. Like, I don't know if I'm ready for this, whatever. I call him, and he says, unfortunately, I introduce myself. Unfortunately, we don't have any openings right now, but I'll keep you in mind. I don't know if you remember this, Professor Horn, but a week before school started, you called me and said, hey, can you come teach geography for us? That was the first time that I had a lot of optimism in being able to recover. This job is not a paycheck to me. This job is not employment. This job has been rehabilitation, therapy, and it's been a new life. And it's been something that I can attest to has made a major impact in my life right now. The only reason I'm even halfway decent at it are the people sitting right there. Faculty, staff, administration, I don't do a very good job of explaining this to you, but I've learned so much from you from a distance and up close in conversation, but also in listening, and I'm so thankful for them. The reason I love this job is because of you all, every single one of you. And it sounds cliche, but I've learned as much from you as I have taught you. I really have. And I see hurting people. And I see people that have struggled or have issues. And I'm telling you that God's grace is real. God's grace is alive, and you can have it. I pushed that away for so long because I thought I was too bad. If I could explain to you the things I've done, you would understand. But if God can heal me, and if God can push me in the right direction for a career again, I never could get back into grad school. I tried and tried and tried. This last fall, I got back into grad school. You're able to see the examples of God working through you. The eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth, strengthening those whose hearts are fully committed to Him. So as you look back at your story, and you look at the things that shaped you, and you look back at the things, good and bad, good decisions, bad decisions, things that have been done to you or things that you've done to other people, trauma you're holding on to, issues in your own life, a bad relationship, a breakup, bad family home, financial aspects, not feeling worthy, self-harm, cutting, addiction, all of that. You look back and you see how those things shape you. It's important to overcome. It's important to understand that you can overcome and you're not alone. Make yourself vulnerable to somebody you trust. Make yourself transparent. Definitely to God, but to other people as well. And you ask yourself, how was the voyage and the heart that cracked without breaking? On your way out, I want everybody to get a little piece of cloth on your way out where you're going out the doors, and you grab that cloth, and it is to remind you of the power of the cloak of Jesus. It's a little 2x2 inch square, and that reminds you that all you have to do when you have no strength left, you don't know where to turn. This woman for 12 years was plagued with a terrible physical affliction, which also in turn affect her psychologically, I can imagine. The only thing she knew to do was reach out with all her strength and touch the cloak of Jesus. That's it. God doesn't always heal us instantaneously, but God walks with us as we heal, teaching us important lessons. The struggle and the problem of pain is real, but the purpose of pain will last a lifetime. May the God of hope fill you with all peace and joy as you overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for tuning in today for our podcast, 7210, The Chapel Series. 7210 is a production of Southwestern Christian University, produced by April Black, and I'm David Roman. Check out the university on our website at swcu.edu and find out more about the over 30 different degree programs that we offer. The campus is located at 7210 Northwest 39th Expressway in Bethany, Oklahoma. Stop by and check us out either on the web or at our main campus.